The following KOPN podcast is made possible by the generous donations of listeners like you. Please consider a donation to listener-supported community radio, KOPN. You can donate securely on our website at kopn.org.
You're listening to 89.5 FM KOPN Columbia, Mid-Missouri's source for in-depth news, diverse talk, and music of the world. It's more than radio. It's community radio on the web at kopn.org. Welcome to Thought Crime Radio on KOPN 89.5 Columbia. This is Janelle, and I'm in the studio with Rich. Rich, yeah, a few minutes ago, I said I thought I had a thought, and you said if you think you had a thought crime.
Yeah.
And I'm guessing people are wondering, what does Thought Crime Radio have to do with? Because we're talking about and protecting human rights of children, and we cover the whole gamut of things that are happening in our society right now.
So what is it? What is a thought crime? One definition of a thought crime would be thinking about things that most people find too disturbing to even contemplate. Certainly the mismanagement and brutalization of young children before they can coherently remember what happened to them as adults and speak about it would fall in this category. If in fact American medicine was systematically torturing and brainwashing infants at birth, well, first of all, the parents who were hoodwinked into allowing this to happen would have a great deal of resistance to addressing this issue, and of course the babies that grow up and face the devastation of the consequences of how they were abused, really most of them cannot emotionally deal with such issues. So perhaps the most subversive segment of any society is its children, the children who are born with the divine knowledge of what it means to be human, and before they are conditioned to forget who they are and to join the machine and become part of the problem.
Last week we had on Dr. David Chamberlain, the author of The Mind of Your Newborn Baby, and he is also writing a new book, The Window on the Womb, Your First 9 Months, and this is about all of us, children through adults, and our experience of the experience of being gestated and programmed in the womb and during birth. I think people might react to that word brainwashing, because they're not as intense about this as we are, but we've been looking at this for a long time.
It is
brainwashing. And so is David Chamberlain, looking at the imprinting, and he described it very eloquently, and basically it's learning. We're learning in the womb, and we're learning at birth, and we're learning in the first moments.
It's not just learning, though. It's sensory deprivation as
right.
well. It's unlearning as well as learning.
A human being is never more sensory than they are in the womb and in the first moments and hours and days and weeks of life. Everything the infant is learning is through the senses.
Their brains are undergoing an explosion of neural generation. They are connecting, they are creating meaning out of everything they experience, meaning which will either hinder them or aid them for the rest of their lives. And the primal experience of early bonding with the mother is crucial to nature's blueprint for creating a happy human being. And standard medical practices in this country seem to be organized around the suppression and diversion of this primal need. And so I think brainwashing is an appropriate term. It's a combination of learning and unlearning.
And that's why we're talking about it. And so a little piece of the news this week that was I found distressing is from a blog called The Unnecessarian, and we're going to have all of these links that we talk about on our blog, which is thoughtcrimeradio.blogspot.com. But this is a document, and it's really in the news right now, the blatant misuse of drugs and technology in birthing. That is the reason why home birth and midwifery is really coming back, because people want to birth their babies gently, and they're understanding that they need to do that. But here's a quote that from this article. It says that they're administering the highest possible dosage of Pitocin in order to deliberately distress the fetus. And that's been common knowledge, but now it's on the blog. If you Google that,
this is ACOG?
Well, this isn't ACOG. This was an article. But if you pit to distress, if you Google that, you will find all kinds of information. But they're saying because it deliberately distresses the fetus. Now, we have a whole society of people who are so distressed and so stressed out and so disconnected from their families and their mothers. And here is an example of how they know that they're doing that, and there is no medical, no scientific, no moral.
This is
no
just about
moral.
Scheduling.
Yeah, there's no reason to even induce a baby.
Yeah.
I mean, there are medical reasons, and when there are, they need
sometimes
to be done, but right now it's being misused profoundly.
Absolutely.
And here's an example, and that's why the cesarean rate is now 31%, and that's why women are now trying desperately to secure their right to give birth at home. And last year, in 2008, ACOG came out with against midwifery and against vaginal births after a cesarean, and now just recently they've put up a page where they were asking physicians to tell their stories of bad outcomes of attempted home births that transferred to the hospital. So the whole birthing community on Twitter and Facebook and MySpace just bombarded ACOG's website with positive stories about birth, because the research shows that it's as safe to give birth at home with a qualified caregiver as it is in the hospital. And in fact, that's without even looking at the baby. That's without looking at the impact of medical birth on the baby.
That's just looking at raw statistics of mortality and things like that without paying attention to the emotional outcomes, which is drastically different.
Without looking at the impact of midwifery being focused on the mother and the baby staying connected, mm-hmm. because that's the foundation to a secure relationship with the mother is the foundation to a future life. And so we're going to be talking about one of the biggest trauma. I mean,
it's
devastation.
Prenatal trauma.
To the male child when he is separated from his mother and circumcised. Mm-hmm. And we have a very exciting guest on, and I'm going to get her on the line while you're talking. But her name is Veronica Monet, and she is the author of Veronica Monet's Secrets of Escorts, Tips from a Pro. And she is a certified sex educator, lecturer, and a contributor to a variety of magazines and book projects concerning the positive sex life, safe sex, women's empowerment, and the rights of sex workers. She has appeared on CNN, A&E, ABC's 2020, Fox News, Playboy Entertainment, and Bill Maher's Politically Incorrect, as well as dozens of radio talk programs, both local and syndicated. And she's going to be here. Well, not here. She's on the West Coast, but she's going to join us in a few moments here on our local community radio to talk about the emotional and intimacy needs of or disruptions of the circumcision and how it impacts a man's relationship with the woman that he loves. And I'm going to get her on the phone while you continue.
Well, I wanted to go a little bit afield here as in a more general sense of how this country is being raped by the powers that be. The corruption that is destroying this country and how systemic it is and pervades practically every last bastion of authority, you know, from the Catholic Church to the medical profession. I was at my doctor's office today and I picked up a Time magazine from last July. I skimmed over two articles. The first stated that the relative decline of the U.S. economy in the context of an integrated globalized marketplace is not necessarily bad news for average Americans. The problem with this, aside from the fact that the impending economic collapse was thoroughly predictable and was consciously orchestrated by the transnational banking cartel, which owns the Federal Reserve, is that the U.S. dollar is the most widely circulated currency in the world. Exports of U.S. debt and dollars is the hollowed-out foundation of the U.S. standard of living. We no longer have a manufacturing base worthy of a first-world country. We have lost much of our export market and one of the pillars of the buying power of the dollar. When global investors realize the depth of the economic hole our so-called leaders have dug for us, with many of our manufacturing jobs exported to other countries under a federal tax code which rewards U.S. corporations for exporting these jobs, these investors will be lining up at the door to cash out of dollars by the droves. Those dollars will come back to an economy which is already in deep recession with over 20% unemployment, notwithstanding U.S. Government figures. The actual unemployment rate is actually about over 20%. In states like Michigan, it's over 30%. Those dollars have to go somewhere, and so the result will be massive inflation, possibly Weimar Republic-style hyperinflation. The bubble that Obama has blown, the new credit speculative bubble that the Obama administration has blown, is only delayed and intensified the impending storm. So Time magazine goes on to blame deadbeat American households for the financial crisis, which is the most evil kind of lie imaginable. The initial $700 billion bailout was more than enough to pay off the mortgages of every American household. The core of the financial crisis is the derivative speculative bubble, not the mortgage crisis. The speculative bubble, the derivative bubble, which so-called financial experts hardly ever mention, consists of the credit default swaps and collateralized debt obligations, which make up the bulk of the $250 trillion toxic waste, $250 trillion of toxic waste hanging around the necks of the Wall Street banks, which have been deemed too big to fail, and for which the liability for this speculative excess has been transferred to the American taxpayer under the Obama administration. Furthermore, Time's blaming of American homeowners for the credit crisis is truly an example of blaming the victim. There used to be laws in this country against predatory lending. These laws were blatantly ignored by the federal government under the Bush administration, which even went so far as to actively block state government investigations into predatory lending in all 50 states, using a Civil War-era law which allowed the feds to preempt the state attorneys generals. When Elliot Spitzer blew the whistle on Bush's malfeasance in a Washington Post op-ed, he was soon busted for patronizing a prostitute. And therein lies the segue into the second Time magazine article that caught my eye, the wholesale breakdown of the institution of marriage in this country. In all likelihood, Spitzer is among the 75% of American males who have been circumcised, i.e., sexually and emotionally lobotomized by American medicine under a long series of false pretexts, of which HIV is only the most recent example. Time admonishes us to take marriage seriously, as if we are collectively guilty of forgetting our genetic programming and recipe for emotional fulfillment. What they forget to point out is that we as a society have been emotionally crippled by our own medical profession. Let me play an audio track of what American baby boys have had to put up with for over a century, something which usually occurs behind closed doors in soundproof rooms. Can you pan up the input?
From the head, you see the outline of the head and the penis, right?
Yeah.
So we're taking the skin right down here, right? Right down to that line that you're talking about. No, that just crimps the whole thing.
Less
some anesthetic. Okay? As a way that you'd use it. We mix into the mixture here. The effort to see a drop here, okay? And
they haven't even got to the worst part. this is just the preparation.
We're in tears.
This is just the preparation. They're about to apply this Gomco clamp.
They haven't even done it yet.
They haven't even done the Gomco clamp yet. They have just.
This is the baby. We're going to put this video on the blog.
Yes, we'll put a pointer to it on the blog.
ThoughtCrimeRadio.blogspot.com. We're going to show the video of this baby. So this baby's not even having the procedure yet. He's just being.
Well, he's had his foreskin separated from the head, and he's had the scissors applied to the foreskin, and now they are in the process of attaching the sterile vise, which will be used to crush the foreskin.
And they say that babies don't remember this.
Right. Okay, so now he's tightening the screw that is applying the pressure to crush the foreskin.
I'm sure people would wish that I would shut this off, but this is what babies go through.
We aren't going to shut it off until you people pay attention.
This is what circumcised men experience.
Yes. Okay. So. Okay, might as well shut it off. I think this is enough. This is more than enough.
If we saw or heard that anywhere else, we would all be outraged and we would be stopping that.
This baby is trying to tell us something, and nobody's listening to him, but we're listening to him. It's time to put a stop to this madness.
So I'm taking a deep breath. Because our purpose of doing this is to bring awareness to the population of men who are hurting so deeply and they don't even know why it is.
They don't know what has been taken from them.
And are you with us, Veronica? Are you with us?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
I can hear you now.
So hard to listen to that.
It really is, and thank you so much for being here. We are honored that you are with us here today. So
so much cruelty going on this planet that people just numb themselves to. It's just
this country is having a crisis of authoritis. I call it. It's trust in strangers. Mama told me not to trust strangers.
Yeah.
Especially with your babies, you know, and. You know, the institutional biases of the medical profession have just created a caricature of health care in this country.
So
it's mind-boggling to think that the human beings that were in that room performing this horrible procedure on this poor innocent baby are so cut off from their own humanity and their own ability to connect with that pain that they could continue to go forward.
One of the people in the room was the father.
Yeah.
And that's, fathers, one of their, you know, biological functions is to protect their children, you know. I mean, who else is going to do it but the parents? And the mother is probably off resting in bed after giving birth, and the father is being, the father is so brainwashed that he's actually able to stand there and watch this happen without stopping it.
There's female genital mutilation, which occurs in usually other countries. Occasionally this happens over here. But it's usually perpetrated by the women that have actually suffered female genital mutilation as well.
Yeah, this is a classic illustration of the compulsion to repeat the trauma.
My theory on this is that if we admit that this is going to be harmful to our child, then we have to make a little window there to admit that it was harmful to ourselves. and that there is so much crushing pain and emotional trauma buried around that, that the only way that that parent can feel okay about what happened to them is to re-perpetrate toward their children.
Yeah, the first stage of grief is denial.
Yeah, so it is a self-perpetuating activity. Once you have perpetrated, the same thing happens with domestic violence, incest, any kind of perpetration. Once you've gotten your victim acclimated to it, then they can go out and re-perpetrate with impunity because they have been completely desensitized to their own pain.
Yes, that in combination with adulatory attitude that society has towards medicine. You know, Hollywood has done medicine a huge favor in casting these courageous life-saving doctors. Not that there aren't heroes in the medical profession.
No, but I know what you're talking about, and shows like that.
Right.
Yeah.
The institutional issues involved in medicine have just crushed the humanity out of it.
They really do, most of our systems are designed to interact with people who are robots. There's a fabulous author by the name of Alice Miller who wrote a book called Thou Shalt Not Be Aware. And I just enjoyed very much the way she charts how we are completely emasculated as a people. You know, our ability to have an opinion is removed from us.
It's true. It's true. That's why there are such things as thought crimes.
Yeah, and it happens over and over and over again. So it starts with the parents, who of course tell you this is the way it's always been, and that's the way we're going to do it. And then the school system these are not institutions of learning. These are institutions of brainwashing on how you can just regurgitate back thoughts that we feed you. So people don't learn how to think, they learn how to memorize. And then by the time you get that first job, you are a nice little cog who knows how to take orders without asking questions or questioning, you know, what the system is doing.
If you're lucky enough to get your first job before you have to actually get drafted into the military.
Well, there's that too.
Pointless wars halfway around the world for no obvious reason.
She calls it the poisonous pedagogy.
She did a lot of research into the child rearing practices of pre-Nazi Germany.
Yes. Well, she was a huge follower of Freud, and then I think she became very disillusioned by Freud because, you know, he did the whole incest cover up because he started interviewing all of these female clients who had been raped by their fathers, and he was about ready to break with that news, and then he decided that it was all a mass hysteria, and he developed the Oedipal complex and said, oh, it's not that these women actually were raped by their fathers, it's just that they wished they could have sex with their fathers.
This is like castration anxiety. You remember that one?
Yeah.
You know, castration.
Penis envy.
Well, I mean, what child who has been circumcised, especially as an older child who remembered what happened, wouldn't be extremely disturbed by any medical professional reaching for his genitals?
One of the things that I hope the listeners will think about is the idea that don't just think that's a baby. We have objectified so many people. We do it to animals too, but we have this idea that it's the other. So there's people and then there's babies. And, you know, when I was listening to that baby, I was thinking about my ex-husband who was circumcised. And I was thinking about how much I love him and how horrific this experience was for him that he has no memory of, or no conscious memory of, and what this must have done to his life to have had to go through this.
Can I mention something about my own experience? It turns out that I did consciously remember my circumcision, at least at some level. It was more of an imprint than a memory. But my earliest memory of life is I was in a brightly lit room tied down to a table with a sheet covering me, with a hole through the sheet that my penis was threaded through, and somebody was fondling me, a man or somebody in white was fondling me, okay? That was what was imprinted on me. This is when I say imprint, it's like the background on a computer screen, you know.
Right.
It's something that is just there all the time, against which everything else takes place.
Wow.
And I'm sure that a lot of people out there in the audience who, if they actually go to the trouble of finding out how circumcisions are done, they're going to remember it too. Because I remember this all my life, and I didn't know where it came from until I found out how circumcisions are done.
Oh, my God. Really?
Yeah.
And what happens is you begin to unthaw, and the memories continue to come?
Yeah.
In level?
That was pretty much of a disconnected thing. I mean, I'm sure it... Well, I know it interfered with my relations with my mother. You know, that I... She was... I didn't consider her really a mother, I guess. I never really established that emotional connection with her. So...
You know, when I think about what it was like to be abandoned at birth, because they took me off to an empty nursery and left me there for 12 hours unattended while I cried my head off for apparently 12 hours because my mother was down the hall and could hear it. That's had a huge impact on my life, where I feel abandoned. I feel, you know, like I have to do it myself or it won't get done. I don't trust people. You know, it takes a lot for me to trust people. And I think about all the implications that birth trauma has on me, and then to try to wrap my mind around what it would have been like if somebody had actually violated my person on the day I was born, or a few days after I was born.
So horrifically.
I cannot even, it's overwhelming.
I have a term for it, it's called baby rape.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's more than that, it's a mutilation.
Yes, it's mutilation.
It is. It's total mutilation. And what really defies all logic, because there is no logic involved in this, is the idea that Americans can get so outraged about female genital mutilation and be launching, you know, campaigns against it because it's happening in another country, and remain so completely blind to what we're doing to our male babies right here in the United States.
Actually, though... The American medical establishment has a history of FGM as well. They were publishing articles advocating clitorectomies in mainstream medical journals right up through the 50s. And
oh, yeah. Well, you know why we have hysterectomies is because women are hysterical.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. It's a problem. Just yank the woman's genitalia completely out, and then we won't have to deal with her.
Yeah, medicine has a big problem with sexuality.
For sure.
They do.
That's why they want women drugged in labor and delivery. They don't want to hear the sounds are very similar to orgasms and sexual sounds.
Well, and for good reason. Sometimes women actually are having orgasms during birth.
Yes, and that's
very intimate.
That is another forbidden thing.
Oh, totally. We're not supposed to talk about any pleasurable responses that nature might have built in. So let's give them an epidural so they can... completely disconnected from the process.
But we can make them believe that they're connected because they're so awake and alert, and they're just numb from the waist down, and they'll remember everything.
There you go.
So, Veronica, you and Rich have said, both shared a little bit of a story that, and I was wondering, you were talking about your experience as a baby, and Rich was talking about his experience as a baby, and you were talking about your husband's experience and really having so much compassion for him in that moment of hearing the cries. And can we talk about that intersection? Like, I mean, the three of us are very aware of our own birth experience, and we've gone through processes to integrate and heal that. So, but most people haven't, and they're totally unaware of what they're acting out. I call it baby cries. When, you know, and that would be like when you were talking about feeling abandoned,
right?
Or when Rich is talking about the intensity of his experience, then we try to connect with another human being, and all that wounding is between us.
Yeah.
And what we want to do on the show today is, because we've been talking about this and we know it is intense and it brings up stuff, we want to give men out there in listening areas hope.
Yeah.
That they can... And we all know how hard it is to realize, oh my God, 40 years I've been acting this out... The loss, we go through the stages of grief, the anger, the denial, the bargaining, Could you address that how men and women are coming together in this woundedness around the sexuality issues of circumcision and birth?
Well, first I want to say that for anybody who's listening to this and think, oh my God, some more liberal nuts who have found some way to make a normal part of life a big problem. I understand that. I really do. The first time I heard something about birth trauma, my mother was saying that she felt that my birth had had a huge impact on my life and it was a negative one. And my whole take, I thought, well, that's silly. You know, I've processed so many, you know, abuse issues and recovery. I've been in it for 24 years, thank you very much, and I've been in tons of therapy. I can't imagine there's anything else for me to work on. And who needs yet another problem? I can't even remember. And I really thought that she was kind of telling me an old wives' tale. I was thinking, yeah, that whole birth thing, isn't that something that women used to believe in? But we know better than that now. So really, really trained by, you know, my college diploma and science to completely think that these things have no effect on babies. And two things happened for me. One was that I just started getting like this incessant hit around the idea. When she described to me, you know, how traumatic it was for her to be forbidden to run to my rescue by the doctors and the nurses and told that she had to stay in her bed or she might die, you know. She'd had a normal birth. There was absolutely no reason to tell her that. 2 years later, she gave birth to my sister, and they let her get up and walk around. And she was just completely confused and dumbfounded at this point. It's like 2 years before that, she's not allowed to get out of bed. So it obviously had this huge traumatic effect on her, and when she told the story, I found myself actually feeling some feelings. But I still felt like I was just mostly reacting to her feelings and thinking, well, poor mom, it must have been horrible to hear her baby cry, you know, not be able to come to get it. It took a while for me to start seeing that this is actually having some impact on my life. So I guess, you know, for the listeners, the first thing I would say is go ahead, you know, feel irritated and skeptical, because that's like part of the normal reaction to this information, is that it makes you feel kind of irritated and skeptical.
Aren't we sort of describing an issue of dissociation?
Well, it is. It's also denial.
Mm-hmm.
It's also denial, but I mean, it's a stage we all have to go through. And then if you just don't run away from it, that's the one thing I would say. If it's really not your issue, there should not be any reason that you can't talk about it or think about it, no reason that you have to slam the door on it.
Mm-hmm.
If you feel like you have to slam the door on this topic, that's a pretty good sign that you do have some emotional charge around it.
And you can't ignore it. I mean, it's part of you. You have to deal with it. If you love your lover and you want to have a lasting relationship, it's something you're going to have to deal with one way or the other.
Well, and I think, you know, to love ourselves. And of course, the thing that I find most concerning, that we don't pass this horrible wounding onto the subsequent generations.
Yes. Our society can't afford to create any more traumatized...
No, and I think for people who have been abused, sometimes that's the way you can get in, because if you have been abused, it's a hard thing for you to have a lot of compassion for yourself. But if you can think about the poor, defenseless children that are going to come after you, who could have a chance at happiness if you're able to face your own trauma and face it realistically, so that we don't have to keep doing this. The reason we keep doing this is because we're trying to justify our pain.
Trying to escape from it, yeah.
Yeah.
This is really the test of a human being, you know. This society is obsessed with masculinity, you know, and being, you know, John Wayne and the Terminator and all this. But the real test of a man is to, you know, defend and protect children. To face up with, you know, a real warrior is someone who has lost everything. or at least they think they've lost everything, and they keep fighting, and then they discover that they didn't lose everything at all.
Mm-hmm.
What you just said is so powerful, because if that baby was unable to protect himself and that father was unable to protect his baby, then we're not able to be protected.
No, we've given our power away to the government and the authority figures that go with this society structure. People don't even know how to defend themselves anymore.
Yeah, this medical profession is a cartel. It's a monopoly which accreditates itself. It's set up its own network of medical schools, and it determines what is valid science in the health field and what is not. And they have simply completely lost track of all semblance of science and humanity.
So we have to get back into our bodies, and this is the challenge, because when we're traumatized in these ways, we are outside of our body, and then it's very difficult for us to connect with this baby that's crying. This baby is in its body. The idea that the baby doesn't feel as much as an adult is ludicrous. The chances are that the baby probably has far more sensation, far more cognizance than the adult could ever possibly have, because they haven't started numbing themselves to life yet.
Yes, exactly.
So how does this play out in relationships, in your opinion?
Well, one of the things that I think, as far as the genders go, and I just wanted, for your listeners, you know, I'm a certified sexologist. Here's the sad thing about that. I actually have 5 times as much information, academic education about sexuality, as most medical doctors. So if you go to your doctor and want to talk about sex and feel like he's a little vague or kind of avoids the topic or maybe seems a little embarrassed, it's not your imagination. He is. He's had 12 hours of training around human sexuality. Most of it was about procreation and sexually transmitted diseases. He knows nothing about pleasure. And nothing about connection and love and or even, you know, spirituality as it connects with sexuality. So he's really in the dark. And I think that our conversations, now I consider myself a feminist, and what that means to me is that I absolutely value and applaud many of the strides that the women who came before me made to get me the ability to vote, to make it possible for a woman to run for president, all these wonderful things that I'm just so grateful for. And I have a huge problem with the fact that our culture seems to have attached a great deal of animosity towards men. So when a man and a woman comes together, and that's not the only way that people have sex, there's gay people, lesbian people, there's hermaphrodites, there's intersex, there's all kinds of sex going on out there, and I want to embrace and welcome all of that. But for right now, our purposes, we're talking about a man and a woman having penis-vagina sex. I think that we are still operating from this idea that a woman is somehow or another violated or desecrated by sex, and we have to find ways to kind of justify that or you know, make her feel like she's not being a victim or taken advantage of or somehow or another losing standing as a quote-unquote good girl. Our focus is so much on preserving this idea of women being pure that we don't even ever stop to think about the man and how he's wounded. You know, it seems like our focus is very much on how the man needs to please the woman, how he needs to perform for the woman. That doesn't make a real welcoming atmosphere for us to be able to start talking about, you know, what's going on with men's bodies and how they might actually be cutting themselves off from their genitalia. I think so many men are focused on their penises as being another extension of performance. Like, can I get it hard enough? Can I keep it up long enough? Can I give her multiple orgasms? This becomes another way of separating himself, the man, separating himself from his own emotional response to his own sexuality.
And he has to, you know, a circumcised man has to concentrate on having all these physiological reactions that would normally come naturally.
Yeah.
You know, the many men have to resort to fantasies.
Well, our entire culture is built around the idea of circumcision, because we talk about beating the meat. choking the chicken.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've got some really violent metaphors for even, you know, how a man would masturbate. And my experience of, you know, for those of you who don't know, I have a background in the sex industry before I became a certified sexologist, and I've dealt with men's bodies, quite a few of them, over the course of a decade and a half. And my experience has been that men who are circumcised, which was probably the vast majority of my clients, have horrible, horrible problems with sexual response. And it is like trying to find some place on there that might actually have some reaction, some sensation. And dealing with an uncircumcised penis is a totally different experience. I would usually have to go on the other side, like knowing that this person is going to be very responsive, could possibly come quicker than they want to. And, you know, that I have to be very careful not to overly stimulate it too soon. And one of the things that I think a lot of people don't realize is that the penis was actually meant to be a mucous membrane, just like the vagina.
It's an internal organ.
It's supposed to be an internal organ. It's supposed to produce its own lubrication. And I'm not just talking about pre-cum. I'm talking about everything that would have been under that foreskin. And then the foreskin is supposed to interact with the vaginal opening in a way that there is this mutual kind of tug of war between the foreskin and the vagina, so that there's all this pulling on the skin that starts arousing the clitoris normally, just as a byproduct of having intercourse. But instead, what we have is the circumcised penis doesn't catch on the skin. It goes straight into the vaginal canal where there's very little sensation. And then couples have to find ways to stimulate the clitoris artificially. And, you know, not that there's anything wrong with that. I don't want to set up any hierarchies here about sexual behavior. But it's like we're all working past this handicap now, as opposed to the parts fitting together the way they were created to fit together and just bringing mutual pleasure automatically.
And it needs to be stressed that this really is profoundly disempowering to women, to cut off men from emotional attachment to them. I mean, for better or worse, men are the stronger sex. They tend to be more economically mobile. They are the means, oftentimes, by which a family can make the daily bread and all this stuff. And this country has the highest divorce rate of any industrialized country. And you know, this is really a war against women as much as it is a war against men.
Well, I'm not sure I can sign on for everything you said there. I think there's a lot of women, actually, especially young women, that are starting to make their own income and finding themselves quite independent. But I think the important thing for me as a sexologist focusing on sexual function is the idea that both men and women lose in the proposition of circumcision because of the fact that, first of all, the parts don't fit the way they're supposed to, and second of all, there is a cross purposes in objectives here. Whereas a woman might very much want to focus on foreplay, a lot of men, especially if they're circumcised, are in a rush to try to get penis stimulation because it's going to take quite a bit of it to get them where they want to go. And again, their focus is very much on trying to make that penis function in a particular way. Whereas the, I think when a man is not circumcised, he might be a little more likely to want to engage in foreplay himself in order to enjoy the sexual, you know, experience longer. So his focus might actually be more prone towards the sort of things, that activities that a woman would also find arousing. I kind of think we're, you know, men and women, when they have penis-vagina sex with each other right now, we have this circumcision intermediating between the man and the woman that is frustrating for both people.
It's like Big Brother in the bedroom with you. You know, it is. It's like the state intervening in your most intimate relationships.
So what you were saying about the uncircumcised male and partner, would that include after sex where, you know, there's all these stereotypes about the guy just wants to roll over and have a cigarette and the woman wants to cuddle?
Well, I can tell you this, circumcised or uncircumcised, the best way to get a man to want to cuddle is to not ask him for it. I think a lot of men are performance oriented and they think they've performed and now she wants more too. And I have found that when I was working as an escort, because I was quite happy to just say, okay, fine, your time's up, you can leave now, they all wanted to cuddle. They all wanted to cuddle and to be close because, you know, it's human nature to want the thing you think you can't have. And some of the games that go on between men and women are quite simple. It's just the dynamic of one person has taken one role, the other person has taken the other role. And if you reverse that role, then so will the other person. So if you're the person who's, you know, kind of clamoring for connection and conversation, sometimes it's going to feel like they're getting nagged or pursued, and so the impulse is to move away from that. If that's not what you're doing, you're more likely to, what's the saying, you get more bees with honey or whatever.
Than with vinegar. That's what my granny says.
And I hate to use a cliche like that, but I mean, what you're talking about right there, I think, in my experience, it really doesn't matter whether you've been circumcised or not. It just matters whether or not you're feeling cornered or pressured. If you feel cornered and pressured, you tend to move away from those energies.
Sure. So we're talking to Veronica Monet, a sexologist, and we're talking about circumcision and the dynamics between men and women and the impacts on men. And boy, time goes fast. We have about 4 minutes that we need to wrap up, and I will put your information on our blog, but I wanted you to also let people know information about your website and what you're doing.
Thank you, Janelle. Thank you. The website that I would refer your listeners to is sexwithoutshame.com. That's sexwithoutshame.com. And, of course, I've got an email address, veronica@sexwithoutshame.com. And, of course, they're also welcome to call me toll-free. My toll-free number is 888-903-0050. That's 888-903-0050. And I work with men, women, and couples around sexuality, relationship, and recovery issues.
And so it's possible these issues and situations between men and women that get so embroiled in their sexuality, there's hope?
There's absolutely hope. And here's the thing. One of the things I'd like to leave your listeners with, and here's probably the biggest pearl of hope that I can offer anybody. I want you to know that there are people on this planet who do not have access to genitals at all. They are not able to access their genitals, and yet they're alive and having very full and fulfilling sex lives. The human organism absolutely needs to be sexual. And if we lose sensation or we lose an entire organ of our body, other parts of our body can and will allow us to continue to live full sexual lives. I'm thinking of some clients who are quadriplegic. Now, that evidences itself differently for different quadriplegics, but one client in particular I'm thinking of, quadriplegic meaning that he has no sensation genitally and no function genitally, fully capable of experiencing a full-blown orgasm just by stimulating his neck and his earlobes.
Wow.
So there's no reason any of us has to feel handicapped or limited, and it is quite possible to achieve amazing, rocking orgasms just by breathing.
Wow, that's hope, girl.
I guess that's an indication of the centrality of the sexual experience.
Very important. We start masturbating in our mother's womb.
Yes, it's true. Both male and female fetuses.
Both male and female. So the fact that the, and, you know, circumcision was invented to try to curb masturbation.
Mm-hmm. Yes. That was the entire purpose. I mean,
it is. It's all about reducing pleasure.
Yes, the purpose of circumcision, just to spell it out, was to diminish the male sexuality.
Yeah.
And I would say that that's probably why we're doing this long 6 or 7 week series on circumcision. Mm-hmm. Circumcision is to bring us back to the point of being pleasure-seeking humans and peaceful humans.
Because the two go hand in hand.
They do, and I'll tell you, I believe that if we can start having a shame-free approach to sexuality, if we can start embracing pleasure and our sexuality, that we will actually experience more love and more peace and less violence on this planet. And there's a really good example of that in an ape called the bonobo, which lives in the Congo. It is a very sexual creature and is completely nonviolent.
Yes.
But people don't even want to talk about this ape because it's sexual and it embarrasses them.
Maybe we could put those links on the blog, too.
Yeah, there's a lot of...
Bonobo.org, if you get a chance. Yeah, it's a fascinating creature. And coincidentally, now here's something that goes for all human cultures that have been sex positive, where they weren't trying to punish people for being sexual, have just coincidentally been very female positive.
Yes.
So we find in cultures that aren't punitive around sexuality that there is also an attitude of creating egalitarianism between the sexes.
Mm.
This is very interesting. It's really a history of colonization by large-scale social institutions like religions.
We need to have you back just to talk about that.
I would love to talk about that, yes. And it is a plot. It's a plot to eradicate female power. It's a plot to eradicate pleasure. And it's a plot to turn basically our world into a very violent, militaristic world, which, as any of us have noticed lately, has succeeded.
Yes.
Yes, it has. So, Veronica, thank you so much for being with us. I wish we had more time. We're so grateful that you were here with us, and you have given us hope.
Thank you, Janelle, and thank you both for doing this important work, and thank you for playing those babies' tears. I hate listening to that stuff. I won't seek it out actively, and I need to be reminded just how horrific it really is.
And when we do that, we can't continue.
Yeah.
And so next week we're going to have Marilyn Milos on, and Marilyn Milos is the founder of NoCirc and the director of the National Organization of Circumcision Information Resource Centers and the organizer of the International Symposium on Circumcision. And since she's begun her work, I think 20-some years ago, the circumcision rate has gone from the 90s to the 50s, and she's going to be here talking about this agenda by the white North American to push circumcision in Africa to prevent AIDS.
Which is totally bogus and is likely to increase the AIDS transmission rate in Africa.
She's also going to talk about, probably if we have time, restoration. So thank you so much, Veronica and Rich and everyone listening.
Thanks, Veronica.
Thanks, Rich. Thanks, Janelle. Love to both of you.
You too.